KPCW News Time now, 8:10. Joining me now in the studio, Charlie Sturgis with the Mountain Trails Report. Thanks, Charlie. How are
you? Good morning, Leslie. How are you?
Good.
All right.
So what have you got going on?
Well, let's see. Let's just talk trails. You know, obviously, trails are in great shape out there right now, and we're probably in the best part of the summer. You know, we're pre-bugged. It's not too hot. You can ride all day long. You can ride right up until, 9:30 at night these days. So that's pretty cool. The only thing that really probably still has a little bit of snow on it is Pinecone. And a little bit of snow to traverse if you're headed up even by Shadow Lake, on the Shadow Lake Loop. Otherwise, everything's pretty much clear, dry. We still are seeing some dead and down coming with various wind episodes that we're having with the heat. So if you do see something down on the trails, feel free to send it to charlie@mountaintrails.org or rick@mountaintrails.org. Or if it's in the basin, you can send it to Bob, which I can't remember. It's maybe Bob R. at Basin Rec. But if it's easier, send it to us, and I'll send it to Bob. But just give us a location and maybe the size of the tree helps a lot, so yep. We can get after it right away.
You heard about the one on Rob's Trail.
Bob, I think, is going to go up there and get that this afternoon. A friend of mine sent me that, and he said he also saw a fully mature cougar at the same time up there.
So, oh, man.
Yeah, so he said he was up there like 6 o'clock, 6:30 last night.
Yeah. This was a big hike. A group, the Newcomers Club, were hiking up, and the tree came down like right there as they were watching.
Yeah. That's scary.
It was. Yeah. They said it was the most scary part was that it was so loud.
Yeah.
But they were all okay.
I've been caught in the middle of a blowdown where hundreds of trees went down. But that's a different story. We don't have time for that today. You will notice that Free Mason, which is in your area, Leslie, is people are going to find it's a wonderful addition to the Lost Prospector kind of trail area. That is officially open. The rock work was finished up this week. We haven't done a ribbon cutting over there, but we probably will do. And then also you probably noticing a new trail in Round Valley. And just so people are aware of what's going on over there, this trail is designed to be a wider, lower grade. It is going to be directionally up for cycling. It is built with the idea of a gentler trail, but also one that is people can, the guys from NAC and stuff, can hand pedal that trail up. And we're thinking it also with it, keeping our fingers crossed, can't hold me to this, but if it actually does work out that it is settable for snow biking, it'll be a great addition because it'll get you all the way to the top of Barrel Roll. So that's where it comes out right now, the very top of that hill.
So it comes up from the US 40 side or from
comes up from 7101, and it's going to be a beautiful trail. And I think you're going to find it's, if we can use it for all the different things we're thinking about, it's going to be great.
So when's that going to be open?
Oh, you know, it needs finish work. I mean, I think a lot of the rough work has been done. The machine work has pretty much been in there. So I think maybe another week to finish that up. I'm putting my foot in Rick's mouth, but I've been known to do that. But anyhow, you'll see it for sure. And that's the way that's going to go is it'll be uphill for bikes. And, of course, a little bit gentler, easier up, wider. And we'll accommodate hand pedal cycles as well.
Awesome.
Yeah, we're excited about it.
Yeah. Anything else?
No, I think just go out there, have a great time, you know. Be aware of afternoon thunderstorms. And, we're probably going to hit the bug season here shortly. So just keep riding.
I've swallowed a few already. Yeah.
It's just barely.
Well, I was going to point your attention to an article in the High Country News where it has just a whole list of trail slang. So you can now call Rick, I guess, your head trail dog.
All right.
A trail dog being here. I'm going to pull this up here.
You'll like that better than what
I did. A skilled, experienced trail worker.
That's that boy,
mm-hmm.
Right? Rick's been out there. You know, he's 12th year with Mountain Trails.
Yeah. So smell the barn to begin to think about off hitch while still on hitch. I guess that's with your bike on your bike hitch. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
have a smelling a barn, I could see sort of a heading for home, getting ready for a beer, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. Let's see. And duff, that's dead organic matter, such as needles and twigs that have fallen to the floor.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Now I'll buy that one. That's something we see a lot of. We don't see a ton of it here, you know. You do like in Flagstaff, Arizona, you get really loomy trail materials, which is great riding.
And then the baby head, of course, rock roughly the size of an infant's head used to fill in a variety of trail structures.
Well, if you remember correctly, over in Red Pine years and years ago, there was that whole baby head section that you had to ride to come off the ridge. That was, you know, part of that double track, and it was terrible riding. So fortunately, we don't ride a lot of baby heads.
Great. Okay, Charlie, see you next week.
Leslie, thanks a bunch.
It's Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. KPCW News Time, 8:15. KPCW News Time now, 8:16. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, as we reported earlier this week, the Summit County Council on Wednesday put the Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau on notice that it wants to renegotiate the contract. It divvies up the transient room tax monies. In the studio to talk more about what that means, I have Bill Malone, the executive director of the Park City Chamber Bureau, along with Chris Eggleton, chairman of the board. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
So, Bill, was the council's action a surprise?
No, we've been in conversation with them for a few months now about this. And so, you know, we knew that it was on the agenda for them to formally, I guess, make the move so that they can notify us of their intent.
So that was why you were on at the meeting, because
Correct.
The agenda item was there.
Yes.
Yeah. So have you received the official letter?
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm assuming any next week sometime.
Yeah. So how does the contract work now?
Currently, we have a 10-year agreement that was developed in 2011. That kind of carried us through 2021, acknowledging a 90%, 10% split on transient room tax collections in Summit County. That contract always had a 360-day provision for either party to notify the other to say, we want to renegotiate at that time. So, you know, that has always been in the contract, and, you know, they chose to exercise that. And now the clock starts once that happens, but we would be having conversations regarding renegotiating for our 2017-2018 budget, which would be a July 1, 2018.
All right. So how do you anticipate it changing?
I don't know. We understand what their idea is in terms of that the dollars have increased, you know, significantly over the years. I went back and looked at our agreement from 1982, the dollars have changed quite a bit. The cost, as we all know, of everything to operate has changed as well. But transient room tax has a legislative intent, just like a gasoline tax is to be spent on highways and roads. A transient room tax is to be spent on hospitality and tourism. And so there are specific items that those dollars can be allocated to. And we don't know what the county has in mind in terms of their changing that percentage and what those dollars would be allocated for.
Well, the numbers I heard in 2011, the chamber received as part of its 90%, about $4.5 million. Today, that's about $8.6 million. In 2021, they say it would have been over $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, what have you been doing with all of that additional money that's been coming in?
Well, number of items. You know, we've increased in terms of our international presence. In terms of that, we've also stepped it up on communications. Have increased our advertising. We've gone from 3 television markets to 5 television markets across the country now in the winter. It's obviously, as you know, it's a highly competitive situation, you know, in terms of trying to garner market share in a pretty stagnant number of skiers in the nation. And so we've been out in New York and Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco, trying to generate them choosing us as the place to go spend their discretionary income.
Right. I mean, are you hearing, because it sounds like maybe some of the county council people have, that there's a point that we've done enough to promote tourism?
You know, that's an interesting way to, you can look at it, but it's just maintaining market share is a challenge in itself. As you know, you look at 60 million skier days and our ability to our gain in skier days in our community is really at the expense of someone else. So it really is when I work closely and, you know, communicate with my counterparts in Vail, Aspen, Whistler, I mean, they're very sharp organizations that are doing a lot to try to gain their market share, and we're doing what we can to be successful in our community. We work closely with a lot of businesses. We have had that luxury of having this increasing dollars for marketing that we've done other things and stepped up in other ways. We've worked closer with arts and cultural community in terms of the helping to fund the Arts and Cultural Master Plan. We've stepped up our contributions to help sponsor Leadership Park City, those types of things which we've been afforded because we've had a growing budget.
So, Chris, let's bring you into the conversation. I mean, you've got your annual meeting coming up, which I'm guessing next year's budget gets approved. So
yes.
Next year's budget won't be impacted, but it's going to be the budget following that will be?
Yeah, this decision by the County Council would really impact the budget starting fiscal year July 1, 2018. And so as we approach July 1st in the annual meeting in a couple of weeks, we'll make the announcement, and the executive committee and the board of directors already met and approved the budget. And so we'll hold the annual meeting and we'll conduct business as usual. And as Bill said, the clock has really started ticking to get with the leadership to start renegotiating.
Yeah, and since it didn't come as a surprise, since you've had some time to at least think about it, I mean, have you started thinking about then what cuts will have to be made? Because they're not doing this just to do it. I mean, you have to anticipate some kind of cut, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think for my perspective, again, obviously I'm not as operationally minded as Bill, but I think where the direction needs to go from the leadership and the executive committee has to start with a dialogue with the county to say, what do they plan to do with the cuts and their share? Because there's always been a strong cooperation amongst the parties, and that'll maybe give us some guidance on the areas we need to focus on. So I think immediately it's really hard to turn attention to exactly what we want to do until we want to understand how they want to spend their funds so that we can continue to operate in a very cooperative manner with the county.
Yeah. Bill, do you anticipate this, meaning staff, though, or is it just maybe scaling back the television markets or something like that?
Yeah, I would think it's mostly in terms of markets. It would be in terms of probably more on the side of the advertising side of our budget. And then I think we would have to look at other areas where other avenues exist. We grant a lot of dollars in terms of with nonprofits for special events in the community. And there are other mechanisms with restaurant tax and wrap tax. And maybe that gets pared back in terms of those areas. We really haven't looked at it, but we don't think it would affect us operationally. It would be more in terms of size and scale of specific markets.
So when you mentioned about the uses of that tax going towards hospitality and tourism, I mean, the county is using some of that, of course, for open space and recreation. Is that
under
the umbrella of tourism?
They're interpreting that to be that. When you look at the legislation, the enabling legislation for the counties, it does say that they can spend it on sports and recreation facilities, including practice fields, stadiums, and arenas and related facilities. So,
it sounds like capital facilities as opposed to just natural.
Yeah, you know, it's an interpretation of that. The other parts of it are pretty specific, as it talks about promoting tourism, recreation, film production, conventions, helping to fund such things as visitor information centers, exhibit halls, museums. But in the sports and recreation area, I mean, we're assuming that's what we heard council talk about on the radio yesterday, that they're looking at recreation facilities. We don't know the specifics of exactly what they're looking at.
Okay. While I've got you in here, of course, you do have your annual meeting coming up July 12th. Public's invited to that if they want to RSVP for the luncheon. I'm thinking it always sells out.
Yeah, we'd love to have anybody come. Our Miles Radiman Spirit of Hospitality Award winner this year is Becky Kearns, formerly of Zions Bank. And Becky will be honored at our luncheon this year. And she's a very, very deserving person, having been involved in so many projects, especially the hospital in our community, kind of that early driving force.
Okay. Any other thoughts from you, Chris?
No, we appreciate your time, Leslie.
Okay. Chris, Bill, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, as we mentioned, the council heard from a number of members of the public last night on a couple of issues, both the plaza and the so-called micro transit plan. In the studio with me now to update us, Becca Gerber. Good morning, Becca.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see. Let's start with the plaza first. Staff reports that the current design is 17% short of meeting net zero goals. So is that the $1.3 million shortfall that we're looking at to try and get it to that net zero?
No. That $1.3 million is really a combination of increased construction costs. There's very low employment in all of Park City. All of our construction bids have been a little bit low compared to their actual costs. And so we're trying to find a way to mitigate those additional expenses, just mostly for construction and some other type planning fees. But the 17%, you know, we did talk with Luke Carton about that, our sustainability director, and he said, you know, there's about a 20% kind of leeway in that. And so they're building that 17% on in case we're not sure how effective, how much energy the elevators are going to use. We're not exactly sure how much energy the HVAC system's going to use or some of the heating is going to use. So we have a little 20% kind of give in there. You know, we're doing the best we can to make all of our buildings meet that net zero, but our goal is to make up that difference by having all of our utilities be on a solar subscriber program or dedicated solar in the long run. So we feel like we're getting close to the mark, and we've really been pushing the envelope on most of our building projects.
So I guess I'm confused. I thought this was an open-air plaza.
It is an open-air plaza, but because there will be parking underneath, there are some air. You have to have the filtration down there. And then also because you're going to have electricity and bathrooms, and then the fountain obviously probably won't be running in the wintertime. But you do have to maintain some of the operational electricity type things at a certain temperature so they don't freeze. So there's a minimal use of electricity going on, but there's simply only, because it is an open-air plaza, there's only so much roof space to put solar panels.
Councilmember Matsumoto asked about using open space to offset that shortage, and she was informed that council had given prior direction preventing that from happening. How come? I mean, we just acquired 1,300 acres.
We did, but our goal is not to use our open space as an excuse for us not making the right decision. We want to be as clean and sustainable as we can within our community, and then to be able to offset that additional amount, that's great if some, you know, there's a gap we can use. But we also wanted to use that for our community because we know getting the city there, the municipal buildings there is going to be one battle, but getting our community there as a whole is going to be a whole nother battle. And we might need those carbon sinks to balance it out when we get to that point.
So a lot of talk about whether or not to make the Main Street Sweet Alley bypass road one way at the top. And I guess I just, maybe I need to get this right in my own mind, so correct me if I'm wrong. So we're talking about a new road just to the south of the Wasatch Brew Pub, mm-hmm. but north of the current Sweet Alley connector that we have mm-hmm. now. And so the idea is that this connector would open when the plaza is being used so that traffic could still get back to Main Street?
No, I think it would be used in the other direction, actually. My thought that if traffic was coming up Main Street, rather than having it enter into the plaza, it would be a way to divert them back down Sweet Alley and divert them. I think that we're talking about directionality on this topic still, and there's still a ways to go. We're still waiting for some additional transportation reports to come in. And we had the public come to us with some great ideas, but really the idea is that if you wanted to use that whole upper space and close off the whole upper part of the street, you could just use it to divert traffic around and keep a flow of traffic, because that is one of the things we face when we close off different parts of the street, is traffic gets backed up in all directions.
So the connection that we have now from Sweet Alley to Main mm-hmm. Street, that mm-hmm. goes away?
It would still be there at the top for residents and people coming out of the neighborhoods, but you wouldn't be able to access it from Main Street. You wouldn't be able to drive all the way past the Treasure Mountain Inn to the top of Main Street. You would be forced to turn at the Brewpub Plaza, right above the Wasatch Brewpub.
And you could still make a left onto Main Street then? I mean, go back up Main Street?
Well, at that point in time, you'd be on Sweet Alley, so you could make a left up Sweet Alley or a right down Sweet Alley.
Oh, I need to look at some diagrams because I don't get that at all. But I think that's part of the concern, though, mm-hmm. is that that residents now not being able to get to where they want to go. But then if you build it as a two-way street, then you've basically defeated the idea of a plaza.
Yeah, you know, the goal is to create a nice plaza space at the top of Main Street. And how it's going to be used, we're still kind of working on. I know we heard from a lot of residents last night that are concerned that it will be overprogrammed. We did hear from some Main Street businesses that are looking for it as an opportunity to drive business to the top of the street. And we absolutely understand that we have a transportation issue. And so we're still working through some of those bugs. And we're looking to get additional transportation reports at the end of August that will help us really decide how we're going to do how we're going to direct people. But it is very evident to us that we need some additional signage, some directional signage. There was talk about using the trolley in a different way, and I actually thought that was a great suggestion because I do think that we could use the trolley as a more of a transportation solution on Main Street. So there are a lot of great ideas coming out, and we're still working through exactly how the transportation is going to work as far as directionality at the top of Main Street. But I think we've made a lot of progress. And I think it was really nice to hear from both two residents that said, you know, we're not against the plaza. We want to make sure that it's a nice amenity for the residents as well as for the businesses. And we've made a lot of progress and we still have some ways to go.
So when we look at the uses for this, mm-hmm. I mean, has it changed? I mean, because at some point, you know, it was going to be just a gathering place, maybe a mm-hmm. quiet park area where people could, you know, get to the top of Main Street and chill. But we're also talking about programming it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's kind of run the gamut for me. I remember hearing about it when I was on the HPCA and they talked about wanting to have an ice skating rink and, you know, like hot chocolate stands and things at the top, and then you could use it for events in the summertime. And then we've heard a lot from our residents that that's too much and we're putting too much of an impact on our local residents and we need to create a better balance. So we shrunk, you know, there was going to be a stage up there and now it's more of a pavilion where you could still do some acoustic music, but it's not set up to amplify music as much in all directions. It's always, I mean, I think that this is a discussion we're having in our community with the balance of events and residents, and can we create a nice amenity that can be used by our residents and still support our business community, and how do we find that balance? So look for those discussions to continue.
So when do you expect to make a final decision about the design?
I believe that the design phase, we did say to go ahead with the one direction road last night. And then as far as the directionality and traffic studies, when they come out in August, we'll make some more decisions about how the traffic flow will work in that area.
Okay, moving on to the issue of micro transit. My understanding is that you guys agreed to re-advertise the request for proposal for this?
Yes. So that one was a tough one for me. I really felt passionately that, I guess I should say that one of my pet peeves with our transportation system in the past is that I felt like it's very much a transportation system, a ski shuttle for those that are looking to get to the ski resort. And it hasn't worked well for local residents who are trying to get to work or trying to do day-to-day activities. And so I really felt like this micro transit opportunity was going to be one of the first really resident-oriented transportation options that would help make it easier for residents to get around on a day-to-day basis. I do feel like we had so much going on over the past 2 weeks with launching the Camas route, with launching the Electric Express, and we didn't get information out to the public as we probably could have. And there was a lot of acknowledgement that maybe we dropped the ball on this one, as far as educating our community about what microtransit really was. It has been in discussion since September of 2016, and we were calling it Colobus at that point in time. And there are sections of Summit County between Park City and the Junction that are designated areas that we would like to have these microtransit options in, and that was always a part of the plan. You know, our taxi companies, our local taxi companies, are feeling a little bit threatened by this plan. And I understand that they're also feeling threatened by Uber and Lyft and other disruptive technologies. Our hands have been really tied by the state legislature. We aren't able to do anything to not allow Uber and Lyft within Park City proper. And actually, a lot of our taxi companies have jumped on board with Uber and Lyft. So we were put in a little bit of a tricky situation. Of course, we want to support local businesses, but I really feel like most of our local citizens don't use a local taxi on a daily basis. And this really is supposed to be a program that helps us shift the paradigm, gets people out of their cars on a daily basis, and gets people into public transportation in a way that's efficient and safe for them.
So by re-advertising the RFP, will you include all of those that had already been considered, the four?
We are hoping that they will rebid again.
Oh, they have to rebid. Okay.
And then this also opens the doors if a local company would like to put in a proposal. We are certainly willing to take a look at it. But I think they know what the standards are at this point in time. And hopefully there has been some clarity. I believe all the residents that showed up at the meeting and saw last night's presentation, and Alfred Knotts did a wonderful job of really laying out the cost benefit. It costs almost twice as much to run a bus route as it does to have one of these micro transit vehicles in operation. So I feel like it was a really enlightening presentation by Alfred last night, and I think a lot of people got a much better perception of what this program actually entails.
So how soon can this happen?
I'm not sure on the exact timeline that this will take, but I'm hoping that we can get it in place by the end of summer, because I really do think that this is a great option for our locals, our elderly, anyone like single parents who have to work all day and their kids are home. I think this was a resident-centric option.
So again, this is not getting somebody from their house to the grocery store and back again. This is getting them to a transit stop so that they can get on a bus to get to the grocery store.
And it kind of depends on how the neighborhoods work and which neighborhood you're in. It's to get you so we actually opened up the door that they could talk about how this would work again. I feel like if you are closer to the grocery store than a transportation stop, it would make sense for them to take you to the grocery store and not drive you to a transportation stop. I think one of the great things is we now have this express white line that's going, from the junction to Park City downtown. And if we can at least connect these micro transit options to that line so that people can get a straight shot into town or a straight shot out of town, that will be helpful. But really, it's about meeting people where they're at and creating a transportation option that works for people that the bus doesn't work for.
Yeah, and as the mayor, quite scratched his head a couple of weeks ago about this. I mean, to do that, now we've got, it would have been easier just for me to get in my car and go to the store than have somebody come to get me, bring me to the store, go somewhere else, and then come back to get me and bring me back home. Instead of two trips, we've now got at least four.
Well, so the way that the app works, it actually works as kind of a carpool app in some ways. So it would pick up and drop off people on the way to and from. And then I also think that there's the added benefit once you start getting people out of their single occupancy vehicles. And if you drop someone off or they take a bus somewhere, they're more likely to walk or take a bus again to their next destination as opposed to jumping back in their car. I've seen people drive from the flagpole lot to the post office. That's a walkable distance, I believe. But it's interesting in how I think you just have to get people in the habit of breaking those ties with their car.
Is this a generational issue here? I mean, is that what we're having, some struggle with the older generation trying to get in with the whole Uber?
I've heard it from all sides at this point. And I do think that there was a perception problem with the Tesla. And that also frustrated me a little bit, because I do think that people weren't getting the whole story on the Tesla, that out of four proposals that the city received, three of them that actually felt like viable proposals all were advocating for the Tesla. And I did use the Downtowner in Aspen, and it was a gem car, which is kind of a glorified golf cart. And our city is laid out very different than Aspen or some of the other areas where this program is in effect. I would not want to be in a glorified golf cart crossing 224 or 248 or having anyone go up or down that. I think that there was a safety issue at concern. And I also think that there was a misperception that the city was going out and buying Teslas. Really, the cost of the program includes drivers who are being paid a reasonable wage. On that program, they were being paid $15 an hour and had the ability to collect tips. It includes insurance. It includes charging. It includes vehicle maintenance. So when we really looked at the cost, it was actually much cheaper than running a traditional bus route.
I wanted to ask you about this, Nan. Worrell had brought up that the library apparently concerned about the impacts of charging for parking at the library. This is the first I've heard of this.
You know, there's going to be dynamic parking in all of the Old Town lots up here, and I'm not sure if I know exactly what parking is going to be charged, but I think that the fear is that when you start charging parking in one area that it drives people to another lot. And so, yeah, we're making some big changes, and we feel like they're necessary changes. The community has come to us time and time again and said, transportation is an issue, congestion is an issue. You know, we need to find some solutions. So we're trying some different things right now. We're trying some, you know, we're putting out some pilot programs. We're doing some parking programs. And it's going to take us a little while to figure out all the kinks and pull it together. But we really think that this is the direction we need to be going in to make sure that Park City is livable for everyone.
Well, the library board must have gotten some word, though, mm-hmm. that the lot will be
charged.
Paid parking.
Mm-hmm. And again, I personally can't speak with great detail to that right now. But my perception was that it was a fear that parking would be pushed down there from people not wanting to pay up here.
Okay. Alfred's in Monday. I'll ask him.
Okay, that would be great.
And just real quick, any word on how the plastic bag ban is working?
You know, we are in its early days, and so I look forward to hearing more from the community. I've seen displays at both grocery stores for reusable bags. I've heard a lot of positive feedback from our community that they're really excited that we've moved forward with this. So I guess... here we go. Let's see how it goes. And everyone, remember to take your bags.
Okay. Becca, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:47. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, earlier this month, the Park City Board of Education selected Ann Peters, one of three candidates, to fill the unexpired term of Phil Kaplan, who resigned earlier this year. Ann joins me now in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I moved here in 2001 from New York. Came out for 2 years for a job at Sundance Catalog. And fell in love with this place. It had everything I'd ever wanted, bikes and horses and skiing. So 2 years turned out to be 17 years. I have a 10-year-old in the district, so got involved in the schools and learning a little bit about what goes on in schools here.
Yeah, so your background is in marketing?
It's in design, product design, management. I've worked for some big companies, small companies, managed large teams, been on boards. So have a lot of the management background because of work.
Yeah. So when you think about, I mean, the candidates, there was you, somebody who spent a lot of time in the schools. Then we had Tommy Tanzer, of course, a teacher, mm-hmm. and he used to act as their teacher union representative. And then we had a teacher and a head of school who has spent years working with emotionally troubled kids, something the school district will be spending millions of dollars on.
Right.
Why do you think the board thought you were the right pick?
Well, I've met both of them, Tommy and Jamie, and they're both wonderful, and I plan to keep them close as I navigate through this new path in my life. But I guess because I'm a mom, I don't know. It's all new to me. A gentleman at school approached me and asked me if I was interested, and I actually never honestly thought about it. Live in a bubble. You know, you can criticize, but until you really step foot into the ring, you know, there's work to be done. So I thought about it, put my application in, and I just thought I could offer something to the district, my management style, but being a parent. I was a substitute teacher last year, so I'd spent time in the schools, have a new admiration for teachers, facilitators, the buildings, everything. To me, that was such a huge eye-opener, and just thought it would be really great to get in there and work with some amazing people to help make change.
Yeah. Well, you've had your first meeting after being sworn in, mm-hmm. and basically found yourself in the lion's den. We've got later school start times, school bond, grade realignment, mm-hmm. mental health, hiring initiatives, crowding, trailers for classrooms. Are you having second thoughts?
Not having second thoughts. In fact, I'm rolling my sleeves up, digging in every night. I have about, you know, five documents that I'm reading to get myself up to speed on all of the issues, meeting with the other board members as much as I can to get their perspective, the history. I think a great thing about being new is you come in with a fresh, shiny new perspective. You don't have the baggage. You don't have the backstory. Whenever you're hired at a job, the first thing they ask you is, like, spend the week, come back to us and tell us what you think the glaring issues are. And so I've done that and sort of wrote down what I see as great opportunities for us to collaborate and work with the community, with each other. So now it's really just meeting with the board members and digging in and coming up with a plan and getting out to meet more of the community.
Yeah. What do you think the biggest issue is facing the district?
you know, having being more of a mom and being in the schools as a sub, I would say the facilities. I think we're outgrowing them so quickly. Just having subbed in all of the classes, especially fourth grade, I just was like, the rooms are full. You know, you just look at technology and you see what everybody else has. And I think this community, which is outstanding and has the best of the best, deserves to have the best school. So I would say facilities, glaring issue.
Yeah. You had heard the survey data presented at the board meeting. It indicated that the board should wait another year to float a bond. Do you have any insight? I mean, kind of as that outsider now looking at that?
You know, I don't have enough information from a parental perspective and a community member. You know, I would say we need facilities. I'd love to dig in and get a better understanding if they're the right ones and if it suits the needs of the broader community. But I think we definitely need to do something about these buildings for the kids. So don't have a definitive answer. Digging in and should have more concrete perspective in a couple weeks.
Yeah. So I'm guessing part of the deal was that the board wanted to know that you would run for re-election. When does that happen?
I think you have to decide, I believe, in March, and then you would get out and campaign, and they'd decide, get voted in November.
Yeah, so even though Phil ran for re-election just last year, he had a four-year term ahead of him.
Right.
You won't serve out this 4 years. You'll have to run in 2018.
Exactly. Yep. So I think my appointment ends December 18.
Okay.
Yep.
And that was something that you were willing to do then. I mean, I'm guessing that's what the board asked you.
That's what the board asked me. It's a great way to figure out the job and see if, you know, it's good for everybody. So yeah, it's a great testing ground. So I'm excited to have this opportunity ahead of me.
All right. So what's the best way for your constituents to contact you?
Yes, please reach out. My email is up and running. I just got it up last week. It's apeters@pcschools.us. Reach out. Email me. I'm on there every night. And I plan to get out into the community once sort of the summer break's over and I get a little more information behind me to get out and meet people and hear what everybody says and wants and thinks. So I'm available.
Okay. Good luck. You got a lot ahead of you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Dan Peters, again, the newly appointed school board member, filling District 1. You're listening to Local News Hour.